represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's been a fun week. All week I've been playing with my drone.
And causing damage.
That is another issue. I did crash my drone this week, but it's now repaired. I'll tell that story a little bit later.
And we also have the edited audio of our escapade last week, so we'll play that later in the show,
Of our drone flight over the police station next door. We actually survived that experiment,
and
we were not arrested. There's a lot of news coming out of the Computer Electronics Show. I'll talk about some of the long-term trends that are coming out of that show, and I'll spend a little bit of time also talking about the legality of drones.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with all if everybody's got their own personal drone? How that's going to be controlled? You know,
it's going to be interesting. I mean, this thing is fraught with all kinds of issues.
It is. You know, I was flying it around my neighborhood. I tipped the top of a tree in my neighbor's yard. It fell in his front yard. Now, I'm glad he didn't have a dog.
He was standing outside and it fell on him.
Yeah, well, I was more worried about the dog eating my drone.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's all about you. It's all about me. And today we're going to feature a guy. I've talked about him a lot, but I realized I never featured him. Steve Gibson has Gibson Research. He does spin right. He's got shields up. Huh. He had an interesting career. He's kind of a, he sort of does what other people don't expect him to do. So he's always had an interesting sequence of events in his life. So we'll feature him this week. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Huge.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Actually, it's two mailbags.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
See?
You've been working out because you picked them both up at the same time.
I've been pumping iron because the mail's getting a little bit. Well, you know, I need something, you know, because you never know what's going to happen when I fly my drone around.
I may have to have
some kind of confrontation somehow where, you know, I'm trying to avoid that.
You have a very vivid imagination.
Yeah, I just sneak over to my neighbor's yard to get my drone pieces. I picked up all the pieces. Fortunately, he didn't see me tiptoeing over there to his yard getting on my pieces. But now the drone.
What time of day was this?
It was dusk. You know, I like to fly the drone at night to see the drone sunset. I like to see sunset from drone.
Oh, that's
from drone
a great
altitude.
Idea.
So it was at dusk. You know, so here I'm tiptoeing around his yard. It's just getting dark. You know, and I got all my drone pieces. Now my drone's all put together again, so I'm happy. That was a long story, which I'm going to get into later in the show. Oh, yeah. We got an email from Alice in Wonderland. Now, Alice is one of our, you know, regular listeners. I don't know how she hears the show down there in Wonderland, probably. She's probably getting the podcast. Yeah, the podcast over the net. Yeah, you just run probably a fiber optic down to Wonderland, I would think.
Where is Wonderland?
Well, it's underground. I don't know exactly where it is, but you go through some kind of cave and then fall down a hole.
Okay.
As you remember. So remember she fell down the hole and all these people down there. So they probably just ran a fiber optic down that hole. And you know, I'm really thinking we're ready for like a revived Alice in Wonderland show.
I think you probably should just read her letter now.
Okay. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm looking for a new job. You know, Wonderland may not be the
employment rate down there is crazy
bad. That's right. Ever since I put my resume on Dice and Monster, I'm getting 150-plus emails daily. Mm-hmm. And this one place, Duke Careers, keeps sending email after email, and I can't stop it. They're clogging up my mail folder. I don't know what to do. You know, I'm almost ready to give up looking for a job with all this distraction. What do you think I should do? Are there any better options than putting your resume on these large job boards? Well, thanks for a great program, Alice. Listening all the way in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the same company is sending you something, you can blacklist their domain. So you can go into your email provider and you can list domain names that you want to blacklist. And if they're not changing their domain name with every email, that will in fact work. Even if the email text changes, if it comes from the same domain, it would be blocked. I would recommend you do that. But I'll tell you, I think these job sites are really set up to be to the advantage of the employer and of the employment agencies, not necessarily the advantage of the individual. I love the technique. What color is your techniques outlined by Dick Bowles in What Color Is Your Parachute?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's basically the anti-resume technique. It's where you do information surveys, you join organizations, you sort of get to know people in the area, and he has a whole technique for doing it. And it was actually based on John Crystal's methods for intelligence gathering. John Crystal was Dick Bowles' mentor, and John used to live in McLean, Virginia. I took a class from John Crystal many years ago, and he was an intelligence agent in Germany, and he'd go out and he would gather information. And so he used information gathering techniques from his war days to develop a technique for looking for a job, because most jobs that are really out there tend to be filled before they're before the advertisements hit the street, and they're normally filled with people who you know or contacts, and so you've got to get a different method of communicating. So that is a great book. I recommend it to all of my students, What Color Is Your Parachute by Dick Bowles. Also, if you can also pick up a lot of part-time work. You know, now, you know, in this new economy, like with guru.com, you can actually put your skill set on there. You can bid on projects. And so you might find a project that you're interested in, which would be a way to get some experience in a different area and bid on it, even if it's a loss leader. Like for instance, when we were developing, we were developing our online platform, as there was some PHP programming. We basically went onto guru.com and we got a couple of guys bidding on it. We got some great programmers actually. They were actually in Russia and some of these Eastern Bloc countries, and we got some great programming from these guys, and it was good experience for them. So this could be an opportunity for you. And it's just not programming jobs on these sites like guru.com. You can bid on many other things. So that's just another way to get connected with the job market. But I would do something non-conventional instead of the conventional way of just putting your resume up on these sites. Great email. Thank you, Alice, all the way from Wonderland. We got an email from Alan in Herndon. Dear Tech Talk, what is browser cache? How do I clear it? Why do I even want it?
Ooh.
It doesn't seem to bother me. Love the show, Alan. I guess people don't talk about browser cache with
can
him.
Can I ask browser cache at the store?
Yeah. No,
you can't do that.
No, browser cache does not work at the store. No, even if it's an all cache store, they typically don't take browser cache. But here's what cache is. Cache is actually C-A-S-H-E. It has an E on it. So it's actually temporary storage. So you store something locally. So, for instance, like in your kitchen, you've got a pantry, with canned goods in it. Well, that's like a canned good cache. Mm-hmm. Because if every time you want a can of soup, you had to run to the grocery store and buy that one can of soup, I mean, that'd be a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
It's much better to go and, you know, and store it locally in some sort of soup cache. And so having local storage as a way to eliminate trips is where the word cache came from, C-A-S-H-E. And it's been used not just in technical terms, but just in general for a long time. Now, what the browser does, of course, the browser, it doesn't go to the store. It goes to a website, and it grabs a web page and pictures. Well, if you're going back to the same website over and over again and you're grabbing the same pictures, the browser says, hey, wait, why am I downloading that same stinking picture again? Why don't I just keep it locally and load it from my local memory or my local cache? So your browser will store web parts in the local cache, and you can tell your browser how much of your hard drive you're willing to allocate to cache. And when the cache fills up, it'll just erase the old stuff to store new stuff. And that allows you to let a web page load quickly. Now, here's where you can encounter a problem. Suppose that you're downloading a page and something happens and one of the web parts is corrupted when it's downloaded, or you turn off your computer and it's only partially downloaded. Then when you go to that page again, it's going to load that corrupted web part into your browser, and then the page isn't going to load. So that's why they say if you can't get the page to load, you know, clear your cache so you get any corrupted parts out of there. Or you may have another problem. Suppose that you're looking at a blog every day. So you go to the blog and you say, well, they haven't updated this blog since the last time I looked at it. Well, it could be you're pulling out the old copy of the blog from your cache and all the updates aren't there. Mm-hmm. So when you bring that web page up, you can hit the refresh button and you can force your browser to load a new version of it, or sometimes you just want to clear your cache if you don't like to carry around all that extra stuff around. I periodically will clear my cache if I ever have, like when I'm developing a web page and I want to see the latest version, I want to make certain I don't have an old one. I will clear my cache. And simply in Internet Explorer, you can just click down Tools, and then there's a little gear icon in the upper right hand corner. Then there's an Internet Options menu, and then you, under Browsing History, you can click the Delete button, and then you can delete temporary Internet files. And temporary Internet files are what they call cache, so you can delete them. Now, website owners, though, like if you have a blog, you should always make certain that the latest page is not taken out of cache. And there's actually a meta tag that you can put in. It's an expires meta tag. And you put down, and you can tell it how often to reload it. And you can have the page expire after so long. And so if you put that the expire time is zero, which means it's already expired, it will always load new content and not take it out of cache. So if you got that problem I said with the blog, it means the guy that set up the blogging page didn't set it up correctly and didn't have that expire meta tag in there. But that was a good question. We got an email from Doug in Richmond. Dear Tech Talk, what's the best option for backing up my laptop? I've heard of many things discussed. What's the cheapest option? Yeah. So Doug, you know, going after the cheapest option. Well, Doug, I tend to use cloud backup for my laptop. It's easy to maintain when I'm traveling. My files are always backed up as I create them. Now, the one thing I don't like about it, sometimes they're backed up too fast. So I'm working on a file, and then I try to save it, and it says you can't save it because it's in use by something else. So sometimes I'm working on the Tech Talk podcast, and I'll get in the middle of it, and I can't save it because my cloud backup system is backing up the file that I'm still working on. So that irritates me. So I'll put my cloud backup on pause so it's not backing up the files as I'm using them, and that's that's the one small annoyance. I use Carbonite, which I like. There are other ones. I like Carbonite. It's $59 a year. But there are cheaper options. I just bought an external hard drive, a 1 terabyte external hard drive. It's got USB 3.0, $62. $62.
That's,
I mean, that's just 1 terabyte. And it's, you don't even need an extra power supply. It's powered through the USB. So you just plug in the USB. You got a terabyte of storage. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking $62 for a terabyte of storage compared to $59 a year for Carbonite.
Yeah.
Maybe you could just back up to that hard drive, which wouldn't be my particular one is branded Toshiba. I didn't really crack it open. I don't know that Toshiba necessarily makes hard drives. They might have another hard drive manufacturer in there, and they've just branded it. But that is actually a pretty good option. Now, the one downside, if you carry your external hard drive with you in your laptop case, and the laptop gets stolen, then your backup's stolen. So you still have the security problem that you'd have. And you could back up at home. You could get a file server which would attach to your router, and they make those. But these are more expensive. And if you really want to get super duper secure, you could get one that has two hard drives in it, and they're duplexed. And you can get a duplex file server for a couple $100s. We're now walking up in the money, and then each hard drive might be another $100. So you're talking $300 or $400 to get a very, very secure backup system in your own home that would give you some redundancy. That's what the duplex is. You write the data to two drives at the same time. So even if one drive goes out, the other drive has it. And once you've got a duplex system, you would be able to, if you'd want, delete it from your laptop because the duplex system is going to be reliable enough.
Mm-hmm.
But with that single hard drive that I've got, that's one copy. Your laptop's got another copy. You can't delete it from your laptop, say if you've got pictures, because now it's only on one drive again. So that's the mistake people frequently make with their pictures. They copy them to the external hard drive, and then they delete them on the laptop thinking they're backed up. But actually, they still only
have
one copy.
They'll have it all in one place.
Yeah, so
if the external drive goes up, then you've got a problem.
So I guess you could get two external drives, but this is why people go to this whole duplex deal. Mm-hmm. So sorry, I get a little overboard with my sidebars.
Well, that's okay, but because I have another sidebar. This past week, I don't know how I saw this, but I was going to ask you about this thing that I saw. It's called the WD My Cloud. It's like a personal cloud tower that you can have at home.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this thing?
It's a Western Digital. WD's Western Digital.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're one of the – they call it My Cloud.
Uh-huh.
It's actually just a file server.
Okay.
But because people think cloud is cool.
They just decide.
I mean, it's just a file server plugged into your router.
Uh-huh.
But because, you know, you're storing it somewhere, it must be the cloud.
But it's not. You're still storing it.
They call it My Cloud. Which means it's really not on the cloud. It's in my house.
Well, the cloud is a box somewhere anyway. You just can't see the box if you're using like...
Okay, this is where the idea of cloud came from. You have multiple servers and you've got some kind of load management. So like if one server becomes overloaded, the traffic's diverted to another server and there's load balancing between them.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually don't know where your stuff is stored because of the load balancing, but you really don't care. As long as it's there. So that's what the cloud was all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a specific device. It's a cluster of devices that are interconnected over the internet. Now, a single device in your house doesn't exactly qualify as a cloud. So my cloud is just a marketing deal.
It's a fancy name for...
It's a fancy name. So if you're going to use My Cloud, and if it's only one drive in it, it's still you still don't have redundancy. So I would get the upgraded Western Digital unit. I mean, they have their whole series of...
They go from two to four terabytes.
But I would get one that has at least two drives in it.
Uh-huh.
And that's the lowest level of redundancy. And then you save to both drives at the same time. That's called duplexed. And then you could then really use that as your backup and delete it and delete your pictures from your laptop. But yeah, everything is cloud these days. It's the new N-word. It's the new buzzword. Well,
yeah.
My drone flies in the clouds too,
good grief.
Jim. So I'm connected to clouds multiple ways.
You were the
Jim.
World's biggest kid.
Okay, we got an
email. Which is fine.
I love it.
I think it's great. We had a blast with this thing last week.
I actually, I'm thinking I may have to upgrade my drone. I'm already looking at bigger drones.
Oh, good grief.
Looking at bigger drones. But if I get bigger drones, then I may have some serious, FAA issues if they can start staying up a long time and flying everywhere.
I have an idea which we can talk about off the air.
Okay. We got an email from Susan. Dear Doc and Jim, I have a 64 gigabyte flash drive and have stored all my pictures on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very convenient, but is it reliable? Love the show. Sue from Reston. Well, this whole reliability issue, Sue. I mean, these 64 gigabyte drives are great. I just got a 64 gigabyte drive, USB 3.0. It's only $45. And you can just save stuff on it. But I'll tell you, it's really a file transfer drive. It's a file transfer drive. I've just seen too many thumb drives that become corrupted or damaged. And you cannot use it as real backup. Now, I have to admit, I've had some of my thumb drives for years. I've never had a problem.
Yeah.
But I've heard horror stories. People, static electricity and their things can damage them. And so I would not use it for an actual backup. You've got a 64 gigabyte thumb drive that probably costs you $45. I could get a 1 terabyte drive for $62.
Right.
That's USB.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be far more reliable than the thumb drive.
And you know what else is really good to do with thumb drives?
What?
Lose them.
Yeah.
Because they're so small.
It's really easy to lose them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now my trick is I get a thumb drive that's got a little hole in it. Put it on the keychain.
Yeah, right.
Then you've got to lose your keys.
I have a bag in my other bag of all of my various and sundry thumb drives and cables and junk like that, so it's less of a chance, but it's
See, technology was supposed to make our life easy.
It has.
Now you've got to carry a whole big bag with you just to keep all your technology stuff in there. I got two bags, because now I'm carrying my drone around with me, you know, and
that to school with you?
No, I put it in the front seat in the seat belt. I put it up in the front seat with me. It's sitting in the seat belt.
It's like your newest grandchild.
I can look over and see whether my drones are with me.
Have you
or
named
not.
Your drone yet?
Not yet. Maybe I should have a drone name.
I think
name.
You should have a drone name. It needs a code name, Doc.
That's right. Yeah. I've decided not to put my name and address on the drone.
That's probably a great idea.
We got an email from Nathan. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have a 9-year-old son who loves to build things. Now, he just worked on a small project, which he was making a little miniature helicopter. But he'd like to do more stuff. Now he wants to build a robot or remote control vehicle. And he says, I just don't know where to turn. I love these projects, but, I need to respond to this need that he's got. Well, Nathan, I'll tell you, I've got the perfect solution for you. I just bought one of these, the Lego Mindstorms EV3. I talked about this as, you know, Christmas gift.
Yep.
I just bought one for my nephews. Their father's an engineer, and they like to do technical stuff. And they love Legos because you can build them. So this thing actually comes with a built-in processor. They call it the Brick. And you can connect it wirelessly, and it's got its own programming language. So you can actually program this thing. It's got sensors, proximity sensors. It's got little cameras. It has things that make sounds. And you can actually program it, and you can do things with it. And you can make robots. You can make it has motors, servos. So you can make robots. You can make little cars. And it is fantastic. It has gotten great, great reviews in schools that want to teach technology. So it does two things. I mean, first of all, the kids can assemble it all themselves because it's Legos. You don't need to have any kind of tools.
Right.
And then you learn programming language. You can test it out. And they have some programs that are already programmed. So you can just download the program to the Brick. And it will start functioning, and then you can start modifying it. Now, it's $349, and you can get all sorts of add-on kits if you want to make this or make that. You know, you can probably spend a lot more than that. But I would recommend that you also get the Mindstorms EV3 project book. It's not part of it, but the project book got really great reviews because there are some excellent projects in that are much better than the projects that come with the kit. And the final thing that's quite nice, there's a blog, and there's a community, a Lego Mindstorm community, and then kids start sharing things, what they're building. So I think this could be a great long-term father-son project for you and your son.
Legos are some of the best things ever.
They are.
I think we should get some Legos and build a drone recovery vehicle so we can chase your drone around when it lands in a remote location.
I'm thinking I think I need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next thing, I'm going to try to get a basket for my drone so I can deliver things by drone. I'm going to compete with...
Well, this will be great in the summertime. You have a backyard, right?
Yeah.
You have cookouts and stuff. You can deliver hot dogs and things like that around the back. Drinks.
Maybe I could get like some sort of food delivery platform around the... I don't think anybody would want to eat at my house, though, because, you get a hamburger and a haircut at the same time.
Oh, my. Well, this is what you would expect from us here on Tech Talk Radio. Doc, put your headphones back on. You're not finished. We need more emails for next week.
That's why we have a professional here. We need more emails. We love your emails.
Where is the
professional? Send them to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll cover them on the air, and we might answer them personally. And, of course, check out the Stratford University programs by going to stratford.edu and let them know that you heard about Stratford on Tech Talk.
We are just getting started here. This is Saturday morning Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. More coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be talking about Stephen Maury Gibson, as his mother calls him. Stephen Maury Gibson was born March 26, 1955. He, of course, is the founder of Gibson Research and the man who wrote SpinRite. And he also has Shields up, and I've featured Steve Gibson's technology several times in the past, but never featured him. Now, he attended high school at San Mateo, California. And while he was attending high school, he got the idea of a computer science and electronics curriculum. So he created the curriculum, and then he taught it for 2 years while he was still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
It became a very popular course, and this courseware that he developed was then expanded, and it was taught throughout the entire San Mateo Union High School District. Steve had always been kind of precocious in technology. At age 13, he was hired by Technica Education Corporation to design and implement enhancements to the company's product line. See, he loved to write in assembly code, so he was writing assembly code programs that would interface to the device, to the company's various types of devices. This was when he was just 13. Now, at 17, he was hired by the Stanford University Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, called SAIL, Stanford Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. And what he did there, I mean, he was too young to be a graduate student or a student, but they hired him to help the grad students there implement some of their electronic devices, because he was just like a whiz programmer. So he would be programming the various interfaces so these graduate students could complete their research. And it was just a very cost-effective way to provide support to the students. That's when he was 17. Then he went to a startup. And then from age 17 to age 20, he was the VP of Systems Development for Advanced Information Design. Now, this was kind of a startup. That's why his mm-hmm. vice, in the beginning, everybody's either president, vice president, or all high level. So it was a startup. And during this time that he was there for 3 years, they released several new mass storage media packages, and he worked on the programming interface. He was in systems development. He also did some marketing. He was sort of just having fun with that. Now, this course, he was going to college all through that time. So then he graduated from UC Berkeley with a double major in electronics engineering and computer science, because he wanted to combine writing assembly language code with the different computer architectures, and so he made it a dual major there. Now, at 20, he became a VP of another company. Now, he was the third employee there as vice president. This was a microcomputer technology company, and they released five products in 2 years. When he went there, they were losing money. By the time he left, they had reached $2 million in sales. Now, I don't think any of these small companies ever actually made it. He was just sort of, always in the startup mode, and he liked the sort of the challenge of starting things up. Now, at 22, he was hired as director of marketing for Educational Data Systems in Irvine. That's a larger company, and he worked on that for about a year. At age 23, he founded his own advertising company. He said, okay, director of marketing here, I got to do it myself. So he started Gibson & Garnish Advertising Company. I don't know who Garnish was.
No.
I couldn't figure out who Garnish was, but Gibson and Garnish, they started an advertising company, and they actually did advertising for 13 different technology companies. And so, because in each one of these small startups, he always did the marketing and advertising, and so he sort of knew how to do it. So he worked on that for a while. But you notice a trend with him. That was when he was at age 23, he started that, and they grew it to 13 companies that they were doing marketing for. Then at age 24, he became director of engineering at Hovic Corporation in Irvine, California. And he was involved with new product planning and design. Now, this was primarily medical technology. They were working on different types of devices relating to the heart, measuring the heart, effectiveness of the heart, and, you know, various types of electronics for that. He was working on that. Then he left that company. I don't think they actually made money.
Mm-hmm.
He left that company, and he went into became an independent contractor working on the same things, medical devices for cardiac monitoring. And he did that for a couple of years. Then at age 26, he started Gibson Laboratories. And this is where he developed the first product that he was well known for, which was a light pen. It was a high-resolution light pen that was used for a pointing device for the Apple II. So it would be used, the light pen could be used for, say, gaming, for instance. That was one of the applications. And that was the first product that he became. That was the Gibson light pen. He became quite well known for that. Well, that technology was actually purchased by Atari. So then at age 28, he became an independent contractor again, doing just little small programming jobs, writing assembly-level code, which he loved to do. And he was also a contributing editor to PC Magazine. And, during this independent consulting time between 28 and 30, he wrote applications for consumer electronics, robotics technology, medical electronics, all kinds of places ready to interface computers to hardware. Then, at age 30, he found his home. It was a long, long drive all the way from 13 up to 30 through all these different companies. And he founded the Gibson Research Corporation. He had two other employees. He had the bookkeeper, and he had an assistant. And so the three of them started the company. He's the sole owner of the company. He started Gibson Research, and he's been president and CEO of Gibson Research since then, since 1985. Now, Gibson Research is known for a program called SpinWrite, which is a hard disk low-level reformatting utility. I used to use SpinWrite all the time. You know, when hard drives were not so reliable, they would get bad sectors in them, and if you would run SpinWrite, you could identify the bad sectors and repair them,
mm-hmm.
or you could exclude them. And so I would use SpinWrite as just a normal way to maintain my hard drives. But now hard drives have gotten so good, I don't even use it anymore. There's technology's changed, but that was his claim to fame. That was a very well-written program, written in assembly language. He prides himself on being able to write very tight code with very small applications, so the executables in the code are very small,
mm-hmm.
and he thinks that programs like Windows have just become bloated with, you know, as far as he's concerned, sloppy coding, and they're much larger than they need to be, and they're resource hogs. He likes to make things small and tight.
Does that make them more prone to things going wrong with them when they get to be that size, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's, they're slower, and they use more resources.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably making them larger, they're easier to do code diagnostics on them because you have intermediary tools. He was writing raw code in assembly language, which really would be hard for anybody else to understand except him. And so I think the way he writes code is harder to maintain than if you write it with these larger systems do. Now, Gibson Research, in addition to SpinWrite, they also have Shields Up. That's that port scanner, which periodically I recommend. You go to grc.com, and you can scan your router for open ports to see mm-hmm. whether you have any security vulnerabilities to the Internet. And then he also made the leak test firewall tester. Said, I'd like to give you a leak test on your firewall. And he was also the first one to create an adware removal program called Opt-Out. I remember that when I came out. I remember I used Opt-Out. This was many, many years ago, and he was the first adware program. So he's sort of been at the cutting edge of this stuff. Now, what's interesting, the only paid commercial product that Gibson Research has is SpinRite.
Uh-huh.
Everything
which is kind of obsolete now,
everything
right?
else it gives away for free. So, you know, I guess he's sold something. He sold the one company to Atari. I don't think Steve's really in it for the money. I think he just loves technology. He loves sharing technology. He does do a podcast with Leo Laporte called Security Now, so he's become sort of a security guru.
Mm-hmm.
Now the main criticism of Steve Gibson is that he tends to make too big of a deal out of some security flaws and blows them up like the world is going to end, and it's usually not that bad. But he's had quite an interesting career, and I really do enjoy going to his website, Gibson Research Company website, grc.com. And it's kind of fun to do that Shields Up program, which I use periodically.
Now, the light pen that he developed for Apple II, I kind of find it interesting that it wound up over on the Atari side. What, do you know what they use it in gaming systems?
It was for gaming. I think he wrote it for the Apple II, but then... At that time, there weren't many games for Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
And Atari was developing the games, and the light pen, I think, application was really gaming. So they bought the technology.
So they used it for, like, guns and things like that to point at the screen? And,
yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
So you could point the gun. I don't know what they did. And it basically can get positioning because it can detect the raster timing to tell where it's pointing on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting.
So that's what he did. And so there's a techie guy who just tried to find himself, and he finally found his own groove when he started his company, Gibson Research Corporation.
I hope you were paying attention, because we've got a free prize waiting for you for your knowledge coming up on the Pop Quiz here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yes, this is a classroom of the airways, as you know.
Yes.
You may have thought it was tech talk, or you may have thought it was drone talk. But actually...
It's becoming drone talk.
Yeah, I know. But actually, this is a classroom of the airways. And when we have a classroom of the airways, of course, we have learning content, learning outcomes. So we have to have assessments.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to have an assessment, which we do in the form of a pop quiz. So those of you who have not been paying attention, you know, may not realize we have this thing. So
yeah, and so you're basically out of luck.
That's
right.
You have
a good prize waiting for whoever
has. You get two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Creme Dining Room if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Steve Gibson. Of course, he's the man who is president of Gibson Research and also the man who wrote SpinRite, as well as Shields Up and other programs. But now that he has Gibson Research Corporation and he does most of his work for free, there's one product that he sells. What is the name of the one product that is for sale from Gibson Research? And everything else he gives away free.
So you need to get that answer to us quickly by calling us on our hotline here. If you're calling from west of Dayton, Ohio, it's 877-936-9333. East of Irvine, California, 877-936-9333. And everybody else can call us on the wildcard line, which is 877-936-9333. But...
And if you're flying a drone in Siberia, you can reach us by Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded to the studio free of charge.
I think a lot of our people have spent time in Siberia. Always talking about Siberia.
I know.
Skype.
I know. I've got a lot of friends in Siberia. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this last week I've been flying the drone now. I've been flying it for 2 weeks now. It's on my third week. And first of all, I've broken 6 propellers on this drone.
Good
so
grief.
Now
You're
I
dangerous.
Have I have purchased propeller guards. I brought it in to show Jim that my propeller
yes.
guards. These are really training wheels for drone for drone pilots. So I decided after 6 propellers, and each propeller is $7.50, that I didn't want to break the bank on propellers, so I thought I better get a propeller guard. So I did that, and then I was flying it around, and I went out one night to look at the sunset out, and I was just I went up to 1,000 feet, and I was just flying around the neighborhood having fun. It was at dusk, and I was coming back to the house to land, and my neighbor's got a tree that must go up 100 feet, and I thought I was going to clear the tree. I mean, I was actually not, I wasn't really paying that much attention. I was kind of a cavalier drone pilot.
I'm glad you're not an airplane pilot.
And so I clipped the top of this tree, and one of the propellers, the tip of one of the propellers broke off. That was the 6th propeller that I broke. And the drone fell crashing into my neighbor's front yard. And the camera went to one place, the battery went another place, and so I walked over to my neighbor's house in the evening. It was dusk. And I was tiptoeing around in his front yard looking for my drone parts. And so I found the camera, I found the drone body, and I found the battery. And then I tiptoed back home. And I had really a bad evening sitting there with my broken drone.
Yeah, because now you can't fly it. I mean, is your neighbor okay? I mean...
My neighbor doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
I'm hoping he's not listening to the radio.
If he
show.
Did, would he? You guys on good terms?
Yeah, we're on good terms.
Okay.
We're on good terms. I didn't land on anybody's head. Didn't land on anybody's dog. Now my other neighbor, if I'd have landed in their front yard, their dog would have eaten the drone.
That's a problem.
So that would be a major problem. So, but then I was worried. I said, "What am I going to do?" I ordered this thing. It's made by DJI. I ordered it from Amazon. I don't even have a dealer. I mean, I said, well, maybe I could try to fix it myself. There's a broken wire.
I took
the top of the drone off. I was working.
Well, I keep forgetting you built your own speakers
yeah,
once, so you probably could
so
fix
I,
it.
So naturally, I took the whole drone apart and I found a couple of broken wires and I soldered them back. Then I finally thought I fixed it all. I got the gimbal working. I got everything put together, but the camera wouldn't turn on. I thought, man, this is not good. And it turned out I was fortunate there was an authorized dealer in Riverside, Maryland, only 22 miles from my house, Intelligent UAS. I'll give them a plug because these guys did a great job. Because I thought, I'm going to go there. They're going to charge me $600 for this camera. They're going to give me some story, and it's going to be really expensive. I dropped it off on Monday. Tuesday morning, they said, your drone's ready to go. They said it took an hour and a half to fix it. We replaced we had put in some extra wires. And he said it's only $50 an hour labor plus the wires. I paid him $93 and had my drone back the next day.
Amazing.
I mean, that was really unbelievably good. I'm really happy that I got my drone back, thanks to Intelligent UAS in Riverside, Maryland. They also sell these drones, by the way.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, it is time we play our little game here. Let us go to line one. And this is MJ calling from Columbia, Maryland. MJ, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thank you. Dr. Schertz got to ask a question.
Yes, earlier in the show I talked about Steve Gibson, of course, president of Gibson Research. What is the one product that Gibson Research sells that they charge for?
The one product is Spinrite.
That is correct. Correct. You win 2 tickets to Fine Dining, the Scafia Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room.
Thank you very much, MJ. Appreciate you listening, and thanks for calling. Hang on a second. Andrew Mitchell, who is our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, will now take your call and give you the prize. So, Doc, do we want to – so we took this thing for a flight last week.
I think we need to go – I think we need to have a test flight right on the air now.
Okay, here's what it sounded like.
Doc, what is it that you have here?
I have my Phantom 2 Vision quadcopter.
All right.
It's got a 14-megapixel camera on it, and I'm going to take and launch this thing. I've actually got the video connected to my iPhone so I can see what that sees. I will take this up to a few hundred feet and look around, take a picture of the WTOP studios from, you know, from a couple hundred feet. Maybe we'll go above the construction site next door.
Okay, it's about 19 degrees and the winds are light here, so let's see what happens.
I have to wait for it to get lock onto GPS. I don't have enough satellites yet. I've only got 3 satellites. It has to get 5 to 6 satellites before it's stable. If I launch it before I have GPS, it won't know where to come back.
This could be a problem.
Yeah.
This would be a $1,200 mistake.
That's right. So this has a GPS. It's got a gyroscope. It's got an altimeter in it. It's got a compass. That's all the tools that it uses to move around. If I lose connection, it will automatically come back home and land at the same place it took off within the accuracy of GPS. Could be this WTOP building could be blocking our view of the satellite. So let's go down here closer to the police station.
Let's walk down toward the police station because this could add an extra element of disaster to what we're about to do.
It could be possible that I could land it on the roof of the police station over there.
And that would really be great if we both got arrested like at 8:59 a.m.
I'll turn on the motor. I could take it up a little. I'll just let it sit here for a while. See, it's drifting because it doesn't have GPS locked yet.
I see that. Everybody watch your face. Because he's got this thing. Oh, that's better, yeah.
I'd cut anybody's hair. So it's... Oh, I've got green now.
Okay, good. Here we go.
Okay, here we go. Let's take it on up. So the iPhone, you can see here, you've got the picture here.
Good grief, we can see.
Here's the top of the WTOP building here. Let me go down here. I'll just get a shot here.
We're all looking at your iPhone. Meanwhile, we have this unmanned spaceship about 100 feet in the air.
So now the thing is actually at it's only 130 feet up.
Only 130 feet off the ground. That's great.
Oh, just shoot it on up a bit more.
Yeah, you do that.
I'm up to about 300 feet now. let's go up to maybe 400 feet. And okay, let's take a movie of the horizon here.
Yeah, okay. Meanwhile, there's traffic.
There's traffic here. That's all right. Now you can see here I'm looking at the horizon from about 100 feet. So let's just start the movie. We're still up there
we are.
It's only 405 feet.
Only 405 feet.
Now, I've taken it up to around 1,000 feet.
I wonder if you have anybody's attention over at the old Naval Observatory or...
Let's take a picture of the construction site while we're at it. Now, I think I better bring it down.
You better bring it down because we have to go do a radio show.
Okay, so I'm dropping it down. I'll try to be careful that we don't cut anybody's hair. How many feet am I at now?
I don't know. You're at the controls. You figure this out.
Okay, here we go. We're dropping down.
It's getting bigger.
Here we go.
Here it comes.
I'm going to try not to hit that UPS box.
That'd be a great thing because I'm standing right next to the UPS box.
Now, here we go. We're coming down. Yeah, do you mind? I think I need to come a little bit closer to us, don't you think?
I think that's a great idea.
You don't think so?
No, I don't.
Well, there you have it. There you go.
And we successfully landed. We actually didn't even crash that time.
Didn't crash into anything, didn't break anything, there were no arrests.
But the interesting is, you know, we were sort of flying over right in front of the windows here at the WTOP building, sort of like we were looking in, and there were these three guys doing a podcast on trends in journalism, and they look out, and there's this drone looking at them through the window.
So they stopped doing what they were doing and came outside to see what we were doing.
And their first question was, who are you with?
Exactly right. KGB comrade.
That's right. Checking on this podcast going on there. So they ended up featuring that on their podcast. And some that I don't even know where it's played, but we're featured somewhere.
I don't have their website in front of us, but we'll get that to you so you can hear them talk about it. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Drone Talk. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. So let's talk about, are drones really practical for delivery? Now, Amazon had a big publicity stunt. They had a quadcopter. It's much bigger than my quadcopter because they've got to carry little baskets of things. Mm-hmm. And then also FedEx is working on it. UPS is working. UPS is working on it. And so there is talk about drone delivery. And, you know, people talk about delivering things to your house by drone. But is it practical? And what about the FAA? Well, Bezos said that FAA is supposed to release guidelines in 2015 concerning autonomous vehicles. And they're planning on guidelines for different types of service. Now, initially, I believe drones are going to be delivered from distribution point to distribution point. Mm-hmm. So if like Amazon's got two different distribution points separated by, 10 miles, I could see where you'd have little robots collecting goods, putting them in a basket, taking it over to a drone. A drone takes off and flies to the other distribution point and drops off. So it's not really going to it's just part of a supply chain. I could see, and there would be certain specific flight paths that it would fly on, and it would just be an automated way to move 10 miles instead of...
It would be really tough to deliver to somebody's door with this, because I think the thing that I noticed when you were flying this outside is you give it a GPS point, but there's a little flux in there, right?
So you
don't want to drop the package in somebody's koi pond.
And
I
think it would be dangerous to fly to a consumer's house and mm-hmm. land. I mean, it could be kids playing out in the front yard.
Sure.
Now, FAA said it's selecting six drone service sites by the end of the year to do testing. So they're going to start testing and to develop their guidelines to decide how to safely incorporate the commercial drones into the airplane. Now, it seems to me that FAA is a little bit behind the power curve here. I mean, I'm running out flying my drone all around, and FAA is starting. They said, well,
they're thinking in a year we'll have this all together.
We're going to get guidelines in about a year. Now the instructions that I got with my drone said don't go above 400 feet. Because of FAA regulations, but mm-hmm. I can't find any FAA regulations, so I just go up to 1,000 feet, and nobody's tapped on my shoulder yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going up to 1,000 feet in the flight path at the airport.
Right.
I think there are places where that could be a real issue.
Sure.
And there has only been one commercial operator who's been approved by FAA for flying drones. You know where they're located?
No.
In the Arctic.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, so they're saying, okay, we're going to let you fly there up in the Arctic because there's not going to be anything.
What do they do with them?
I don't know what they're doing up there.
Let me go talk to Mr. Google while
Why don't you check on that? So there's a lot of work going on. Now, the Senate, of course, being being the masters of movement, have decided to have a hearing. They've decided to have a hearing on the Amazon drone. Now, I'm thinking a hearing is not going to solve any technical issues, but it's what Congress does best. So they're going to have a hearing on it. And what the Senate is going to now focus on is on drones, the legality of drones being used by police for surveillance, because there's a privacy issue, and the drones being used by government issues. But I think there's a second issue that we need to look at with these drones, other than safety or privacy. I think it would be the whole privacy issue with paparazzi getting these drones. I mean, if I were a paparazzi and had my drone, there's no wedding that I couldn't take a picture of outside. I could just fly it up, go right over that wedding. I could fly right over the wedding, fly right down the aisle, and take a picture of the bride and groom if it were outside. Mm-hmm. So I think there are going to be real issues with these drones. I actually think in the end, as far as Amazon doing point-to-point delivery, I believe that we will have autonomous vehicles also that are available for that same purpose and not necessarily have to have a drone for using that.
They're using them in the Arctic to watch out for oil spills, track ice flows, and migrating whales. And they're helping the U.S. Coast Guard in search and rescue operations.
Did they show a picture?
I'm going to send you the link so you can see what this is.
All right,
it does not look like your drone because the landing gear is different on this thing.
So that's the first application approved by the FAA in the Arctic. So
that's
there
very
we
interesting.
Go.
Doc, we're just going to keep it here because of time.
Okay.
So
let's look at some... let's talk about this Target... data breach that occurred. Target had that huge data breach.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually admitted that it's twice as large as they formerly revealed. On January 10th, they admitted that they had a second data breach that affected an additional 70 million customers. And in that second data breach, data was stolen, included emails, phone numbers, street addresses, and other information that was absent from the first data breach, where they stole transactional data for about 40 million customers, and that was credit card numbers as well as PIN numbers. So what actually happened, and Target has not released how these data breaches occurred, but security experts have looked at the first data breach, which was from the point of sale systems, and they think some type of skimmer was used. That's a skimmer is somebody actually broke into the systems and they put in a device that would skim the data as it was being scanned. And there are skimmers that sometimes that people have, they found, put into, say, gas pumps, where they'll skim the credit card information right on the gas pump. And so I think it'd be there was some sort of actual physical security penetration in their point of sale systems, and these skimmers were put in place. But of course, all they got then when they were skimming the data in the point of sale system was just the credit card number and the PIN number. Now, the second breach was into actual servers where they stored customer data, customer email data, their names, their addresses, and all the other stuff that it takes, to open up a bank account,
mm-hmm.
for instance. And so that was from another 70 million customers. And many people think that Target was not following the security obligations under the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard.
You just answered the question I was going to ask.
And they just came out with a new standard as of January 1st, and they think that Target was not following those guidelines. And Target has not revealed very much. So most of what I've given you is more speculation than anything released by Target.
It's really interesting to see how this affects Target, because this is a company that's done quite well, but I went to Target a couple weeks ago. I paid with cash. I was reluctant to use my card.
People want to pay. Now, see, there have been other data breaches at other companies. A lot depends on how Target handles it.
Mm-hmm.
If they handle it correctly, if they admit to their errors, and if they provide identity protection for their customers, identity guarantee protection for their customers, if they do it properly, they're going to be okay. Listen, we just about out of time. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and go to Stratford University website at stratford.edu. Check out our programs in computer security and all those things, and let them know you heard about them on Tech Talk.
We will see you next week. And in the meantime, if you tuned in later, would like to hear the show again, tune in for the Tech Talk replay on Federal News Radio at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. See you next week.
Paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and Federal News Radio.
And the GW Colonials are on the air today, 2:15 this afternoon, the tip-off at 2:30 as they take on the Rhode Island Rams. And then the Wizards host the Houston Rockets tonight at the Verizon Center, also heard here beginning at 6:45. Weather forecast, rain, maybe some thunderstorms, heavy at times today, high close to 60 degrees, right now 41 at outside our studios in Northwest at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio.